In a deed, plant a seed, make a garden grow, and transform the taste of a city.
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with your host, Michael Olson. And now get ready for 1 hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 1394th edition of the Food Chain Radio podcast. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends up there in Quebec City. You are tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What. Folks, agriculture, like most every other business, is growing in two directions. Very, very big, very, very small. Many businesses in the middle find it very difficult to grow in either direction. Those businesses that do grow very big do so by taking advantage of the economies of scale and the specialization of resources. They can grow the most commodities for the least money, and in doing so, win the consumer's dollar. A good example of this drive for scale is the seed business, which is now dominated by three seed companies that own and control 62% of the world's commercial seeds. Wow, at least the ones we buy at the store. And one of those seed companies, get this, is Syngenta, which is, of course, a subsidiary of the Chinese Communist Party. As these companies grow ever larger, they select and sell fewer and fewer varieties of seeds. As a consequence, local varieties of seeds, those seeds that bring forth plants of unique character, disappear from their seed catalogs in favor of those seeds that bring forth commodities. Now, we city people do not like to eat commodities. We simply do not care for that tomato that was a one in a million grown on 10,000 acres, picked green, trucked 1,000 miles, gassed into redness, and that hits our dinner plate with a taste of a tennis ball. We like to eat foods with character. We like to tell the neighbor, I found these really great organic heritage tomatoes that were dry farmed and picked right at the peak of their ripeness. I couldn't wait to get home, so I ate one in the car. Boy, the taste was worse the mess I made eating it. And so today, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to pause to ask, where can we get seeds to transform the taste of the city from that of a commodity into that of something with character? Well, here to help us find an answer, we have Bill Starr, who's a co-founder of Seed School Online. Hello, Belle.
Hey, Michael.
There you go.
Yeah.
And we have Greg Peterson, founder and CEO of urbanfarm.org. Greg, welcome back.
Thank you. Love to be here.
So Greg just told me that we did a show together on his podcast back in 2015. Is that what you said?
It is. I think it was December of 2015, the Urban Farm podcast.
Yes. Okay, Urban Farm and Seed School Online. So one of my favorite stories, and I always like stories from the world of horticulture and agriculture, one of my favorite, of course, was Johnny Appleseed, whose real name was John Chapman, of course, and he was a pioneer apple farmer in the 1800s. And he collected apple seeds from cider presses in western Pennsylvania, grew them into seedlings, and then distributed these seedlings to settlers to start apple orchards. His dream, which was a very good one, was to produce so many apples that no one would ever go hungry. And so the tendency in the apple business is to grow fewer and fewer varieties of apples on ever larger farms. And as a consequence, apples become commodities, true with most all crops. The city provides the means to save this character, and that starts with saving the seeds, which is what you two are really up to. Am I wrong? Belle, let's start with you.
Yes, no, you are. Yes, no, you are not wrong. You know, seeds are this wonderful genetic, they contain this wonderful genetic material that has so many opportunities for us to experiment, explore, play with, breed out, you know, the basis of the food system. Hello. So
it's all of those elements of character that you're talking
about. Absolutely. You know, I was thinking about what you were saying with Johnny Appleseed, and we've all heard the saying, you know, if you want a person, I'm going to say person instead of man. If you want a person to eat, do not teach them how to fish. We teach them how to fish, don't have them, whatever that. I'm not really good at those things, but you get the idea. Well, and so that's what we do. So oh, you're going to show me something?
Interestingly enough, I used that in the introduction to my book, Metro Farm. And it goes something like this. Give me a fish and I will eat today. Teach me to fish and I will eat always.
Same dynamic with seeds. And interestingly, it seems to be the most overlooked aspect of gardening and growing and agriculture. You know, they foist this idea upon us that we have to buy our seeds every year. And there couldn't be anything further from the truth. And I could riff on this for a while, but we'll let Greg step up.
All right. Greg Peterson.
The interesting thing about nature is something that I discovered a few years ago, and that is that the only place that lack lives, this notion of not having enough, is between our ears. Because when I look at the massive amount of seeds that come off of a carrot or lettuce or apples, for that matter, it blows my mind. There is so much incredible abundance. And I think you're right, Belle, that we understate the possibility of seed saving. We make it such that people don't understand how simple it is. It's actually one of the simplest things to do when you're gardening.
That's right.
Is to let your plants go to seed and save the seeds.
And if you started with the right kind of seed, you are up for a lot of fun, because each one of those seeds has a genetic variation to them. So there's a billion different combinations of possibilities that you're looking at. So lots of fun. Is that why there is developing around the country a seed underground of people like you?
Ooh, I like that. Seed underground, Belle.
Yeah. There's a again, it's part and parcel of the whole growing experience, and it's we feel the most vital part of that experience. We now have, I don't know, have you heard of seed libraries, Michael?
Yes, I have.
Seed libraries, yeah. So the seed library movement is huge. Seed exchanges are huge. There's a seed exchange every year in Ogden, Utah. I think they just had theirs with about 1,000 people that come every year. And so people are learning how to grow their own seeds and then how to share them and how to help each other understand the culture of the seed, the characteristics, its adaptation, all those interesting things, because we know that seeds can be very specific to microclimates and certain conditions. So we help each other learn. We come up through the ranks together to learn all these important things about seeds, but not overthinking it or getting too crazy. I mean, you can literally walk out in your garden and pick seeds off of a plant and try planting them. But these other avenues for understanding seeds and sharing seeds, that's what's happening. There's a burgeoning movement, yes. Okay. In understanding seeds and their part.
Well, I had an experience once, a conversation about seeds with a character I met at a Catholic Rural Life Conference in Missouri. And I got up early in the morning and walked across to this little cafe, and there was a single person sitting in there, and I could tell he was a farmer because I can tell farmers from other people. And he was a farmer, and I asked if I would be okay if I sat down for had breakfast with him, and he said sure. Turns out he had a story about his seeds and how his seeds got him into a huge fight with the Monsanto Corporation. And the guy's name was Percy Smizer, and he talked about how one day he woke up to the fact that the canola growing in his ditch would not die when he sprayed Roundup on it. And so he was looking at this and he was wondering what happened. And his neighbor said, wow, you stole some seeds from Monsanto. Those are Monsanto's plants. And so Percy Smizer ended up in court fighting with the Monsanto Corporation for years because of those seeds. And that leads me to the next question for you, Greg. Do you think there will come a time when collecting and saving and distributing seeds will be illegal?
Oh, that's a hot potato question now, isn't it? I think that they might want to try that, whoever they are. But I think that it is so easy to save seeds if you just let things go to seed that it would be hard for them, whoever them are, to stop us. And yeah, so I think there might be a movement for that. And Belle is shaking her head. Yes, go ahead, Belle.
I was just going to say that we could spend hours and hours on the whole genetic modification issue and the ownership issue, and we probably should touch on that ever so briefly. And you had said something in the beginning of the program, Michael, about who owns the seeds. But we're too small. You know, people who save seeds, these small groups, they don't care about us. It's the large industrial concerns that are the movers and shakers of the seed world in terms of control and influence. And, you know, we advocate for small and local. You know, and we know the benefits of that because we can get more interesting, diverse things when we save seeds, and you learn a little bit more than just saving the easy seeds. Again, we can exchange them. They adapt to the regional influences of wherever they are. You can't do that with, large industrial plots of seeds that are grown, you know.
Well, that leads me to the next question for Greg. Do you think being small and local will ever become illegal too?
Another hot potato question. Good one. Let's hope not. I'll just leave it with that.
All right. With that, we'll take our first break. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What. We have Greg Peterson, who's the founder and CEO of UrbanFarm.org. We have Belle Starr, who's the co-founder of Seed School Online. Go at seedsave.org. And, of course, we have you. The subject today is, how do we breed some character back into our cities, some taste? We're tired of eating commodities and we want real food. So do stay tuned. We'll get it.
And now, back to What's Eating What on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Yes, we are back, and we're talking about getting some taste into the city. And the place to do that, of course, is with some seeds that yield plants that have character, so that we don't have to eat commodities that come from 1,200 miles away and taste like tennis balls. Yuck! We city people love eating real food, and it's hard to find it, but maybe not so hard. What's the solution to finding some real food with character, Greg Peterson?
Oh, well, the simplest solution is grow your own. Get the right seeds and start a little garden plot. I've said for decades, the simplest thing to grow and the most expensive thing to buy are herbs. And you can grow a basil plant in a sunny windowsill. And yep. There's nothing better than fresh basil.
Amen. That's why we have some in our garden, too. You know, I was just thinking about things of character. Yesterday, I went to a clothing store, and I was working on a vest, getting a vest. I love vests. And so the gal that is helping me, I brought her some bare limes. And bare limes, they're yellow, like a lemon.
Yep.
And she said, oh, you brought me some Meyer lemons. And I said, no, some bare limes. And so when she smelled the lime, it was like, boom, a whole new sensation came to her. It was just, and she was thrilled. And we're all thrilled when we can find real food like that. It's just a big difference. So the simplest place to start is by growing our own. Bell, where do we get seeds? The right kind of seeds, right? We're looking for seeds that will yield plants with character.
Interestingly, Michael, you can get what they call landrace seeds in many different places. And these are the seeds that have been around for decades, generations, that do have very adaptive qualities, and they're kind of known for their resilience. And, you know, that might be, oh boy, here we go. Black-seeded Simpson lettuce, you know, bell peppers, crookneck squash. There's variety names to all that, but there are certain plants that have been chosen for their incredible resiliency and taste, too. So, you know, you can pick up a catalog and you can scroll through it or online and scroll through some of the catalogs that are now mostly online, and you'll find a lot of these landrace seeds. And the reason I'm mentioning that is because we have a company called the Great American Seed Up, which we refer to as the Costco of seeds. We do an event yearly in Phoenix, Arizona, and a big conference hall at a church. I think we're doing our 12th one. And we sell a lot of really, really popular seeds. Our co-founder, Bill McDorman, was in the seed business and actually still is. He focuses on heritage grains. But he sources from companies that he's worked with for years and years and years.
Well, that's what I was going to say, Bill. It seems to me you have to know somebody who knows something about seeds. Otherwise, you're thumbing through these catalogs, and my goodness, there's the possibilities are endless. So
yeah,
you have to have somebody to hold your hand to start, right?
And it's definitely Bill. He knows how to estimate how many people we're going to have, how many seeds that we're going to be able to sell, and how many seeds we can order. I mean, he's really brilliant for that and for growing, and he's had a lot of other accolades in life. So then the question becomes like, well, you guys advocate for seed saving, but you sell seeds. Well, we advocate for seed saving, but when people show up at our event, we do workshops all day. We have a keynote. We do one on a Friday night, and the next day is Saturday. We do major education, and then we have all these platforms that people have access to online, mm-hmm. so that they can learn about seed saving and realize how easy it is to do to get started. You can make it complicated. You can get really creative, but you do want to start with open pollinated.
What does that mean? That
means that the plants, when they're pollinated, they will produce pretty close to it's called true to form. Let's say true to form.
Okay, so they haven't been hybridized.
But hybridization is not necessarily a bad thing. You can dehybridize, and you can coax out a lot of really fascinating genetics over a period of time. It usually takes about 7 years to stabilize a hybrid line. Now, some of us don't have that kind of time.
and others of us aren't going to take it because that's a lot of time.
Yeah, but there's some really fascinating stuff in there that you would want to maybe select for. So we sell the open pollinated heirloom seeds that people can buy, and then we'll tell them how to save them, you know. And then they'll share their stories, and we'll share that, and you know, it goes on and on. Hopefully they're involved in a local seed library, and there are seed libraries, like I said, all over, over 500, I think, in the country, in this country.
500 now. Seed libraries?
Oh, yeah.
You better tell us about seed libraries then.
Okay. Well, seed libraries, Greg, do you want to step up, or you want me to?
Sure. Right, Greg, step up. Tell us what a seed library is.
Seed libraries are just like book libraries for seeds. And the cool thing in many seed libraries, what they've done when they digitized all of the book catalog cabinets, they had all these cabinets left over. So these libraries are taking them and they're putting packets of seeds in them. Basically, the intent behind them is that you check out a particular kind of seed. And then they teach you how to let it go to seed, save the seed, process the seed, and then you bring back seed the next season. I'm getting chills as I share this because it's such a cool idea. I'm just now realizing this, Bell. This is a whole circle, full circle process here. A seed library teaches people check out seeds, take them away, save them, learn how to save them, and bring them back. Which is so incredibly cool. Yeah.
Well, that could very well become illegal, you know.
Well, there have been some cases, and I was actually involved.
I was
in
just
it.
Kidding. Are you really
serious? No, I'm serious that there was well, there goes the brain. But having to do with trying to be really vigilant about making sure you're not stealing anybody's product, right?
Yeah, well, end up like Percy Smyser.
Yeah.
Right. By the way, there is a good movie on Percy. I think it's called Percy versus Goliath. And people should pick that up.
But, that was how I titled my show with him, too. Percy versus Goliath. Yeah.
I love that.
But I followed him for a few years. So just what a guy.
Yeah, he was really amazing. I got to meet him, too, when we were in Tucson at a conservation organization down there. But yeah, a sweet guy doing great work. I'm trying to remember the status now. I think that, you know, there's some disclaimers, there's ways in which we have to be careful that we're not stealing anybody's genetic material, which, you know, is even a weird thing to say about this beautiful process of nature that yields us so much wonder that, you know, genetic material, you know, but I don't, it's not. You know, again, we're small.
Okay.
We're small.
Okay.
We're small peanuts.
We're gorilla farmers, yeah.
Yeah, well,
hiding in the bushes.
Yeah.
Greg, so, how is it possible that somebody can own a seed or the genes of a seed?
Oh, my gosh. Back in 1991 or 92, Chakrabarty versus Diamond went to the Supreme Court and kind of made it legal, and I'm using air quotes, to patent life, which just is beyond my ability to even, you can see how I'm kind of struggling with this. It's just, all right, I'm going to call it what it is. It's just stupid. How can you patent life? So that's the cool thing about most open pollinated seeds is that they're not patentable. It's something that's in the general public, and you get them and you save them and you share them. And one of the big problems with saving seeds is that before long you have a seed problem. You have so dang many seeds, you don't know what to do with them all.
Well, that's what I'm thinking about the seed library. If everybody does what they're supposed to do, there's going to be a billion, jillion, gazillion seeds from which to select. Which is okay by me.
Yeah, go. I'm hand pumping here. Yeah. Absolutely.
Keep them growing. So you have this wonderful get-together in Phoenix. Greg, you used to live in Phoenix, right?
Yep, I lived in Phoenix for 54 years.
And in your front yard, you had how many fruit trees?
So on a third of an acre, 80 feet wide, 160 feet deep, on a third of an acre, I had 80 fruit trees.
Oh my gosh.
About 40 of them were in the front yard.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the I have a few in my front yard, and I have a lot of fruit to give away. What did you do with all your fruit?
I ate most of it.
80 trees?
Yes, absolutely. My gosh. Well, the nice thing about citrus, so we in Phoenix, citrus grows. The nice thing about citrus is it stays on the tree for about 4 or 5 months.
Right.
And a bulk of my trees were citrus, and they were the kind of citrus trees that I'd love to eat.
There you go.
So that made it simple. And then, you know, when the peaches and apricots and apples showed up, I processed them. Did what I was supposed to with them.
There you go. Good. Just like Johnny Appleseed. Good.
There you go.
So you're in on the seed business in Phoenix, where you brought together all kinds of people from everywhere for talking about seeds.
Yeah.
And
so, yeah, we do. Whoops, sorry.
Go ahead. What was that? What was the name of the event?
The Great American Seed Up. Yeah. And it's really a one-of-a-kind event. I mean, we don't know of any other. Basically, people walk into the event, and we have seeds in popcorn buckets, and we have all the measurements of the different sizes, and people scoop them. They have the tactile, hands-on experience, which really changes people.
Wow.
They scoop them into little bags, and we have a tally card. And they're incredibly inexpensive because the big cost in having a seed company is the packaging. It's the packaging. So we eliminate that. We let people do their own. And then we charge a dollar for a packet of seeds or a dollar and a half, or if it's corn and beans or peas, maybe $2, $2.50. So we have that going. But I wanted to mention, Michael, that when COVID hit, it's like, oh, well, we're not going to do that event right now because it's just not safe. And so we started an online company, and we call it Seed Up in a Box. So people are basically buying these 10-portion bags. So a portion would be what they scoop into, and that's how they pay for it. 10-portion bags, and again, they're deeply discounted, and they can order it online. And then we encourage them to have their own seed library event or Seed Up, or share with their neighbors, their community gardens, their schools, or whatever, or seeds for the rest of their lives.
Wow.
One of the cool things that we have multiple people do is they will buy a bundle of seeds, which our basic bundle is 250 packets of seeds, 10 different varieties. So they buy that bundle, then they throw a potluck, and everybody brings something to eat. And then the 10 people or the 10 families that come to the potluck do their own scooping. So they scoop they separate, bag all these seeds, and they leave the party with 25
more possibilities than they can ever manage, right?
Exactly.
Right. And these are all open pollinated varieties, right?
They are, yes.
So Syngenta and the Chinese Communist Party does not own these.
That is correct.
Michael, the thing that's really important to understand is that, again, they don't care about us. Garden variety seeds are not genetically modified. There's some questions with corn, because that's what they started with, and corn cross is wind pollinated and insect pollinated. But our seeds in the garden world, it's not happening, at least last we checked.
Who knows? I did a radio show with Dr. Ignacio Chapala from UC Berkeley, who does a lot of work with the native races of corn in Mexico, and is discovering that the genetically modified corns are supplanting all of those native races of corn, which is really a sad story when it gets right down to it, because now Bayer AG probably owns the native races of corn in Mexico, because that pollen gets into everything, and they own the genes So it's kind of like what happened to Percy Smizer.
Not yet, Michael. I actually live in Mexico part-time.
Okay.
And Mexico is being very, very cognizant.
They're finding
and very
it, yeah.
vigilant about not having... They've outlawed GM material.
Good.
How that gets kind of, you know, how that affects everybody and with cross-contamination, we'll have to wait and see.
We'll wait and see because we have to take a break. This is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson here today having a great time talking about seeds that produce plants of character so we can change the character of cities from that of a haven for commodities to that of a haven of quality and taste and character. Stay tuned.
So much to say, so little time to say it on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, being city people or close to city people or even out there in the country, we all love eating real good food. Not so much the commodities that come from 1,000 miles away. We want the real food, the real deal. Now, I'm of the opinion that large corporations can't grow real food like that. They're very good at growing commodities, not so much at satisfying the tastes of city people, because we want the real deal. Greg Peterson, what do you think of urbanfarm.org?
Well, let's go back to one of the first things I said. The real thing is what you pick out of your yard. We mentioned my urban farm in Phoenix that I lived at for 32 years that had hundreds of different things that grew in the yard every year that I would just go out and pick. And the way I did it, I'm not much of a seed saver. I'm a seed spreader. Okay. So what I like to do is I like to let things go to seed, and I kind of grab handfuls of those seeds and just spread them throughout my property and let them come back.
You are the Johnny Appleseed, right? A basil.
There you go.
Good. You know, you talk about being able to do that with your yard, which is something that I take great pride in doing it with my yard as well. But not so long ago, I ran across this gal who got in trouble for growing things in her backyard in Chicago. And so the neighbor complained, hey, this gal's growing food in her backyard. And so the city showed up and cited her, and she had to go to court. And she said, you're telling me that I can't grow food in my yard? I'm not going to take that. I'm sitting down. I'm not going to take it. She fought it all the way to the Illinois Supreme Court and won the right for everybody to grow food in their yard. And an amazing story of grit and standing up to ill-tempered bureaucrats with a book of rules and regulations, you know. Yes, spread the seeds and grow them. So I think what we should do now is help teach people how to become seed revolutionaries of their own. And where do they start, Bill? I mean, you take somebody who does not know much about seeds at all, but would love to have the opportunity to dip a toe into this world of seed genetics and all that that it represents.
Well, I'm going to quote our partner, Bill McDorman, who happens to be my wonderful husband. And he would say, start with something that you love. Now, presumably, something that you love, a vegetable, will be what we call open pollinated. You're not, you know, yes, you could start with corn. Corn's a little bit trickier and you have to know a few things, but that's all right. So you start with tomatoes. Tomatoes are self-pollinating. You can grow a tomato in a pot in your window in Chicago or out in your yard in Chicago.
Anywhere.
And then
you can do it anywhere.
literally. So you start with something you love, and then you learn how to save the seeds. So with tomatoes, it's a simple process of cutting open the tomato and squishing out all that gelatinous material with the seeds. And then you can literally, at some point in the future, when it's growing time, after you've dried them out, and process them, which is another little technique for keeping them fresh. And then you plant them. And then you keep, then you kind of keep track. I mean, you know, you don't, you can make it as simple as you'd like, or you can be as scientific and keep notes and all that stuff and say, oh my gosh, there's a tomato that I planted growing in the rock garden bed. It must have drifted over there, and look how healthy and wonderful it is. So we want to find those. Those often are called volunteers.
Yeah.
You know, they're called volunteers. And I love volunteers because they're incredibly resistant and resilient. I mean, they you know, I think about the cilantro and the crack in the sidewalk around here.
They have a will to live.
They do. And so we're stewarding them along. So, you know, if you start the process and you save something you love, it can be simple, it's not messy. And then hopefully you'll run into enough inspiring people like my husband and Greg and others who are doing this work that you'll desire to know more, to be inspired even that much more.
I have an idea.
Yes.
Let's say I have three different kinds of tomato plants growing in the backyard.
Mm-hmm.
So... And got them from as starts from the garden center, so I don't have to start them from seeds. You start halfway through the season, right? Let's say I should find the tomato plant that produces a tomato that I like best, and maybe right. I should save those seeds.
That's the deal.
Not maybe. Save those seeds.
Save those seeds. Okay.
That's the deal. And we can actually teach you how to save the seeds because you have to put them in a little water to release the seeds from the gelatinous material. And then you sift off the water. And it's not a big deal. But
And you dry them.
And then you dry them. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then you save them. You put
and
them
then
in
you
a,
put them in an envelope and put them in your seed library.
Well, you could donate them to your seed library. And the most... One of the most important parts of that is you also want to tell the story, because the story is the way in which we remember the importance of the seeds and the seed taste and its culture.
That's so provenance, right? You need to know its provenance. Yeah.
Good word for that. And then you hook up there again. There are so many groups out there doing fabulous work. We like to include ourselves in that list of groups. And then to help others recognize the value in seed saving. Interestingly, our wonderful master gardeners out there, there's been discussion of doing a master seed class for the master gardeners. But often if you ask them if they save seeds or where they get their seeds, they're going to tell you, you know, Johnny's or Territorial or High Mowing or whatever. Not that those guys don't have good genetic material, but they don't grow a lot of their stuff, and you're getting the one-size-fits-all, which is what we sell as well. We sell the Landrace seeds that we have selected for all the qualities that we think will work when you save the seeds, and then we're going to help you save the seeds.
There you go. What do you mean they don't grow their seeds, Greg?
Most seed companies, like us, we buy our seeds from growers, and often what happens is the growers sell to a seed wholesaler that sells to a seed retailer that sells to you, or there might even be one or two more steps in that process. Fortunately, because of Bill McDormand, we buy directly from the seed grower. So we're getting them direct, and shortening that system process is really important.
It's very interesting because this show, the subject matter that we're dealing with today, fits into Michael Olson's second law of the food chain, which is the farther we go from the source of our food, the less control we have over what's in our food.
Yes.
So it's easy to get a long ways away from your seed in the conventional seed world. But if you're growing, things in your garden and you save the seeds from them, from the chili peppers that, oh, this one is really good, that one not so much. So you start selecting and saving those seeds. And then all you have to do is start them. And you're on the way. So you become a seed revolutionary.
There you go.
The only reason that this is not part and parcel of what we do as gardeners is we've been talked out of it. We've been marketed to. We've been told that you have to buy your seeds every year. That
seeds expire.
That seeds expire. They don't. I mean, you want to keep them cool, dark, and dry. Right, Greg? Cool, yep. Dark, and dry. And then there will be some die-off over time.
Yeah.
But, you'll hear stories of, well, Bill has seeds that he brought back from Siberia in 1989. And we still have some of those seeds that we plant every now and again.
Seeds of what?
Tomatoes. Mostly tomatoes. Yeah, he brought back tomatoes, 60 different varieties. He's kind of famous for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I guess if there's one plant that is so taken up by people, it would be the tomato plant. There's just such a thrill when the real tomatoes come to the table.
We call it the gateway plant into gardening. Everybody wants to grow tomatoes.
Yeah. And everybody ends up growing zucchini, and then everybody has zucchini too much, right? So there you go. But tomatoes are huge in that respect. So let's talk about ways of entering into the world of seed saving and of being a seed revolutionary. And you both have done a lot of work setting up your seed up, as it were. I love the name. It's kind of like speed up, right? Seed up. Love it. And so now you have seed up in a box, which is a clever way of getting the seeds out there in the world. And it's a commercial business. And so to me, that's a perfectly reasonable way to earn a living, is to helping people get their hands on seeds. I love it. What is seedsave.org?
Seedsave.org is Bill's website and his educational platform for how many years? Since the early 80s. So that's sort of been a little bit of a holdover in terms of the name that we've had so many names.
Okay.
The big focus these days is the Heritage Grain Alliance. And we are selling seeds from those we know who grow them, of these ancient and heritage grains that are easy on bellies. They have better flavor profiles. They're really easy to grow. And then a lot of people are growing them to do sourdoughs and right. to do tortillas. Now that's the fresh flour movement, Michael.
Same thing, right? Well, let me ask you that. Now that you brought it up, I have to ask, what the heck happened to gluten?
Oh, Lord. Go ahead. That's a whole hour long show.
I know they
basically hybridized it so that it would produce more, and it messed up the gluten impact on our guts. That's boiling it down.
Sure. Okay.
A lot.
So they commercialized the bleep out of it, and now we can't eat it.
Something and how many like people basically, do we know? I mean, how many people do we know that are dealing with gluten intolerance, you know?
Yeah.
A lot of them, all of a sudden.
Yeah,
And I'm from Montana, the land of Montana hard red winter wheat, you know?
You bet.
Which used to be the best. And
We use that.
So
we use hard red.
Sad to say, but that's the way of it. Let's talk go ahead.
I want to go back to how do we get in.
Yes.
And everything that Bill McDorman, Bellstar, Great American Seed Up, Urban Farm does is education first. And we have a monthly seed chat that I do with Bill McDorman every month at seedchat.org. And it's free. And then we talk about every month we've got a new topic on how to save seeds. And then we put it out on the podcast the following month. So
seedsave.org.
Seedsave.org is Bill's website.
Okay. And what is this chat? Where is that?
Seedchat.org is
seedchat.org. Seedchat.org.
Yeah. It's a landing page so that you can understand how to save seeds. Mm-hmm. And then we offer our Seed School Online, and you can find that at seedschoolonline.com.
And the best thing to do is to plant a seed, grow it out, eat the fruits thereof, save the seeds, and keep going.
And there you go.
Meet your neighbor across the backyard fence and tell them about the incredible tomato that you got. And that eating that commodity tomato that came from 1,000 miles away should really be against the law when it gets right down to it. Because we should be bringing these seeds into our city and using them to change the character of our city and the character of our people. And what a better way to do it than with good seeds and some good soil. And there's a lot of good soil that's going to waste in the cities of our country. So what fun you guys are. Greg Peterson, founder and CEO of UrbanFarm.org. Bell Starr, co-founder of Seed School Online and SeedSave.org. Thank you both for joining me. And I guess if there's one thing we want to leave people with, is some seeds. So get some seeds and grow some stuff. Thank you all for tuning in.
Here. Thanks, Michael.
Well, just a minute. I have to do this.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with Michael Olson. And if your friends missed the show, tell them to log on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com for a listen. Now, go out and find some food with its farmer's face on it and live.